Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you with us. I'm Cassidy, and as always, I'm joined by my lovely co-hostess.
Hey, guys.
This week, we are super excited because we are getting into something that I have been into for a while now. And on top of that, we have a guest. My lovely sister is here to rant with us about all things The Legend of Vox Machina. So welcome, Angie. Thanks for sticking it out with the two of us nerds.
Oh, God, yes. Hey, Angie.
Hey. Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to talk about Vox Machina with all of you.
I know, same.
We are too. So Angie and I have been into Critical Role for a little bit, but Divs, this is like kind of new for her. So I'm looking forward to getting that perspective. That'll be really interesting. But before we do, just our usual spoiler warning / disclaimer. The show is fairly new. I think season one came out in 2022 and season two came out early 2023.
Yep.
So most of our discussion this week is going to focus on episodes 1 to 6 of season one. So it's been out for a while. I think all the spoilers are probably out there, but if you're into Critical Role, or if you are into it and haven't seen the show, just keep in mind we are getting into spoilery territory, so we're probably going to get into as much as we can, as we usually do. And then also, not all of us have seen and or know a lot about the stream version, so I think Divs, you're going in kind of completely blind as far as the stream is concerned, and then Angie and I know like the bare minimum about the stream. So most of this is going to be focused on the animated show. But yeah, I mean, if you're into that, if you like that, hopefully you enjoy our discussion, our ranting and raving, because I have a lot of thoughts on this show and I'm just dying to like scream about it because I think it is like the coolest thing since sliced bread.
Well, that is very true. I wanted to ask you too, because you guys have seen bits of the campaign, and I just recently started to get into Exandria Unlimited, which is like an offshoot campaign or a mini campaign, if anything. And I love the show, don't get me wrong, it was super fun for me, but what did you find was the main difference? Because I think the campaigns are far more spread out than the show, and it looks like they had to condense a lot of information. Did you think they let go of something really, really important, or did they manage to pack it all in like the right amount? What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, I can't speak for anybody else, but I think for us, or at least for me, getting into a campaign was very, it took a little bit of getting used to. It's a very different format. It's a bunch of people sitting around a table describing a story, or basically telling a story, but you're watching them tell the different parts of it. Mm-hmm. And it's really, in my opinion, unique. There's nothing quite like it. And I just thought it was really cool because in today's day and age, you don't really see a lot of oral storytelling like that, where a story is told and described that way, at least not on this scale. And maybe not something that draws this many viewers, but also maybe that's just my lack of knowledge about D&D in general. I'm like a noob when it comes to all of that. I don't even know if that's the correct term. But I don't know a ton about it. And Critical Role was really my first exposure to D&D and like the D&D community. So watching the campaigns was really interesting. And even though I have very limited knowledge of campaign one and just know some like major plot stuff, I haven't seen the stream, but I didn't think the show really sacrificed anything. But also, again, I don't really have a lot to compare it to. So I can't really, in my opinion, I don't think they sacrificed much, I guess, but it is, I think, a tall order trying to take a stream that has like hundreds of episodes where each episode is like over 4 hours or over 3 hours, it's like hundreds of hours of content. And then you're sticking it into a show that's 12 episodes that are maybe like what, 40 to 45 minutes. Yeah. So it's still a lot to like condense. But yeah, I didn't think that it was, or in my opinion, I don't think that they lost anything, but I don't know. What about you, Angie? Did you feel like the show lacked anything, or?
I wouldn't say that it necessarily lacked anything. The way that the campaigns are, the way that I see it is it's like a book. You know, when you're reading a book, I think like hundreds of page, you know, kind of novel. And there's so much that happens in the story, and there are exciting moments, there's some character development moments, there's, you know, a lot of detail that's there. And I think for Critical Role, that's kind of the biggest barrier for entry, because if you're going back to campaign one, campaign two, and even campaign three now, which has, you know, 50 plus episodes, you know, each of them 4 hours long, it's very difficult to kind of, you know, get into it and catch right up. It takes some time to really get into the plot. And I feel like the show kind of makes that format a little bit easier, because you can get a condensed version of the story and it doesn't lose all the main plot points. You don't lose the, you know, I would say kind of the emotional points that each character has, like their journeys, the character development, none of that gets lost in the, you know, show. But once you kind of get into it, once you get like this overview of the, you know, main plot of the campaigns, you can then go back and actually watch the campaigns and, you know, see, I guess kind of see how all those moments developed. There might've been little moments that wouldn't have necessarily translated well into the show format, but you could then go back into the campaign and, you know, it's almost like little tidbits of new information. You get to spend more time with your favorite characters.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think like that's one of the really cool things about having this in like multiple mediums. And like she was saying, obviously, if you're getting into the campaign, it's a tall order, especially if you're new like us. I mean, I started when Exandria Unlimited was coming out. So like that was 2020, 2021, I think. And at that time, campaign one and two had already been done. So that was like over probably 200 episodes each with minimum probably 3 hours of content, not to mention like any one-shots or spin-offs that they did in between. And it, like, I had no knowledge of how these things worked, what they were like, how the gameplay or anything like that worked. Like getting into it, I just kind of wanted to see what it was like. And also the story interested me. So that was an interesting thing. But I think like one of the nice things is because you now have this in multiple mediums, it makes it easier for people who are newer to enter. Whereas when you have it in like, you know, just in stream format, it's a lot to try and catch up, and to catch up quickly and in like a timely manner. And I think the stream also, because it's like a bunch of people playing around a table, there's things that obviously take longer, like, you know, fight scenes and stuff, because everybody has to have their turn, and, you know, everybody has to, like, there's a set order to the way things happen. And you kind of, it's like a round robin type thing that keeps going for a certain number of rounds before the story can progress. So things like that kind of take a while in the stream. And it's not to say that they're not entertaining or they're not fun to watch. I think those are some of the best moments, in my opinion. Like, you get some of the greatest shenanigans in those scenes. But in like a TV show, there's no need to wait. When the fight comes, it's just the characters just react, and you're not waiting for like a certain order or a certain set of like characters to go and do certain actions and things like that. So I think they're two different mediums. It's a little hard to compare them. And I think, like we've been saying, I don't know that they lost anything, but I think it is very interesting to see how they've adapted something that's like hundreds of episodes and hundreds of hours worth of content into a show that's, for now, two seasons and it's 24 episodes. And I think each episode is like 40 to 45 minutes, I think.
Approximately.
So they've condensed quite a lot, but the story, I didn't feel lost. And again, I have like very minimal knowledge of campaign one. And I thought the story like flowed smoothly. It made sense. There wasn't anything that I was like scratching my head about. So.
Okay. So that's a really cool point both of you brought up. Because for me, I haven't watched the campaigns. I've only watched the show. But now that I've watched the show, I want to go back to watch the streamed version to see how that played out. Right? Because it's a really cool format now that you find out. Because like, it's, I love the fact that these lines that you see in the show that came up were actually come up with on the spot by these people in that stream, which is like super cool to me, right? Like, how do you come up with great stuff like that? Because props to the cast, props to the players who became the voice cast in the show. It was like, I really it's a testament to how good they are in voice acting and, you know, improvising on the spot, which I really love. But with that said, let's get going with the show, because it starts abruptly, but it starts at a pretty serious spot right from the get-go. Let's get going with that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the coolest intros, because mm-hmm. it's a tavern brawl. I mean, you're just like,
oh God,
straight
yes.
in the middle of Vox Machina and a tavern brawl, and I think it mm-hmm. is the greatest thing ever, because one of the things that, like, I wasn't sure how they're going to adapt was the, I guess, rating of the stream, because the stream is like, there's no restrictions there.
Yeah.
Anything goes in terms of content, language, whatever.
Yeah.
So I was kind of curious how they would adapt that in show format, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people apparently seem to think that for some reason this would be more kid-friendly.
For real?
Not to say that the stream... I think that there was some, I mean, I wasn't involved in any like online forum or discussion mm-hmm. or anything, so I can't speak mm-hmm. to like specifics, mm-hmm. but I think there seemed to be some group of people that assumed that it would be rated like for teens or maybe like young adult or something, but it's a mature show. And so I wasn't expecting it to kind of just go in straight away.
Yeah, kind of bouncing off on the point of it starting in a tavern, that really just reminds me of EXE, which just kind of has a similar start. And I feel like that kind of gives you a very open introduction to the characters, kind of like, you know, guards down, you know, you don't see them the first time when like everything is like perfect and like crisp and like proper. You kind of get to know who the characters are before they go on their, you know, individual journeys throughout the campaign and in the case of Vox Machina, the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think like that was one of the cool things, that obviously there's a lot of people in this group and introducing them all one by one would take a lot of time, and at the start of something that's probably mm-hmm. not the best move to like introduce us to what, 7-8 people, like main characters who would pop up throughout the show, like not just Vox Machina as a group, but like all the side characters that we'd see throughout the show. So I think like just sticking us straight in the story when they've already kind of established themselves a little bit like a band of adventurers, and like exploring more personal arcs for each character as the season progresses, I thought was really cool. But also just in terms of like entrances, like it was such a fun entrance, like mm-hmm. they're getting drunk in a tavern, and within like 2 minutes of the opening they're already starting a tavern brawl, so like the introduction to that was really cool.
I definitely agree with both of you in that regard, but let's also talk about how, so after this tavern brawl, they get kicked out of the tavern, and that's, and again, interesting, because you, like Angie said, you meet them when they're still a mess of things, not like proper and ready to go kind of thing. They're in a bit of a pickle, like they don't have enough money, they don't have prospects, they're just, you know, just in the middle of things at this point. But what I do like here is that Killit basically even questions why they're still together as a group at this point, because they've been a group for a bit, so they kind of know stuff about each other, but they're still questioning why they're even together as a group at this point. What did you guys think of that?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just like a really cool way to introduce them, because having like 7 different characters meet and then introducing us to them one by one and like where they are in their journey, how they met, it would take a lot of time. And I mean, they have so much to condense and so much that they need to like tell and show the viewers, that I think mm-hmm. obviously sacrifices have to be made, but I think the goal is to make certain sacrifices without sacrificing quality. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think they did a good job, because even though we don't get to see like where these characters necessarily started, you find out as the show progresses, like you get more insight into like their backstories, where they come mm-hmm. from, what they're doing. And I guess in this case, the specifics of how they met isn't really like a big deal, like knowing or not knowing how they met doesn't, in my opinion, detract from the story. And you do find out, again, as the show progresses, you get more information on how they kind of banded together and all of that. But it is also very interesting that pretty quickly into the story, there's already this element of uncertainty, like, what are we doing? Can we do this? Why are we doing this? Like, that sort of thing. Because I think those make for really interesting stories when characters are just like, we have no idea what's going on. We don't know what we're doing. We're just going to wing it and see what happens. And I think, not to like derail this and talk about other Critical Role projects, but when I started watching Exandria Unlimited, that's kind of what drew me to that story, which is like a bunch of misfits almost in a way, who just woke up in a place and had no recollection of how they were meeting, but just kind of were like, went, yeah, we're friends. We're just going to go on this adventure and have fun and like just take on the world. And there's something really wholesome about that, that I think Vox Machina also has. It's just like, they all come from different backgrounds. They're all, I guess, on kind of different journeys, but they still decided to like band together. And even very early on, they had that moment, like you said, where Keelip was like, what are we doing? And it could have been so easy, I think, for all of them to just walk away and be like, we have no idea. Let's just go our separate ways or whatever. But they decide to kind of stick together and take on this adventure. And it just becomes this like really cool and epic thing.
Absolutely. I also want to talk about the setup for this big quest that they're supposed to go on at this point, because I think in the introduction of the first show, like the intro reel, they show you that they were like great guardians of Iman and Tal'Dorei that were protecting the land, but then were basically taken down by some mysterious force, and Uriel as the king is still looking for a solution to this problem. And while they're while Vox Machina is debating whether or not they should even be together as a group, they find this poster, which is like, you know what, you take care of this, we'll reward you fully. And I think this is one of the coolest introductions to the group, because we basically don't know every one of their skill sets, but in this set up, when they meet Uriel and his council, we find out. So let's talk about that, because I found that really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the council is really cool, because obviously, like, I think there's references to them in stuff that I've seen. Mm-hmm. I think they might have been referenced in EXU, I can't remember, but it was also just really cool to kind of see that. One, it's like a fantasy world, and it's that in itself is really cool. But seeing that like there's a council, and that they're also like a diverse council, which I thought was really nice, because it's an animated show. There's no reason they can't do it.
Yeah, true.
Like that part was nice to see, like just the different types of people on that council. But also, I mean, I don't know. I really loved that, like their first instinct or their first reaction to this thing was like, okay, there's somebody offering a ton of money, let's go and get it. We'll do whatever it takes, but we want the money. And I think maybe because I had gone in with some preconceived notions that like, okay, they must be like this legendary group, because EXU is like 30 years later, and by then there was like statues of these characters. They're kind of referenced in a certain way, but I thought like they would be noble heroes and stuff, and not to say that they're not, but at first they're clearly in it for the money, which I thought was really, really interesting. And that was the whole reason, like they go to the council and they're like, yeah, we'll take on this job, and the council's just like, okay, no questions asked, like you guys seem weird, but you're expendable, so here's a job.
Well,
I mean, I guess what's interesting is, like, motives aside, I mean, money is kind of probably the most basic motive to kind of go, you know, into a job like this. But even that aside, the group that we saw at the beginning, they were supposed to be, like, the protectors, you know, of Iman. And they were gone like that, you know, so quickly. And now, you know, the council, they're left scrambling. Who do they turn to? When they're, you know, trusted protectors, a trusted, you know, crew, they're all gone. And so it is kind of weird for them to say okay, we're just going to hire any group of mercenaries off the street, and if they manage to survive and complete this task, then, you know, we'll reward them. But I think it's just kind of speaks to exactly how dire the situation is. They're out of ideas. They don't have anyone that they can really trust to, you know, take down this dragon. So they have to start putting out kind of, you know, different groups to try and actually, you know, find out what is the force that they're dealing with and then take it down.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I think, yeah, at the beginning too, like they didn't even, the council didn't even know what was like behind all these attacks. Yes. They were just killing random people. They were just like, there's a thing up there and our best people couldn't take care of it. So we need, like, I think like Andrew said, like it's, they were at their wits end. They didn't know what to do. And the situation, like it was desperate, or the council rather was desperate enough that I think they were just like, we'll take anybody at this point. It doesn't matter how qualified you are. If you're willing to fight, we'll take you. And I think it worked out well-ish at the start anyway for Vox Machina, because they were like, we need money. We need something to like do, and we need to earn somehow. And the council was like, great, expendable people, like just send them off and see what they can do.
Absolutely, but let's not forget the best part of this group, and that's Trinket.
Yes, Trinket is wholesome. I love Trinket.
I know. Trinket is Trinket's the best. MVP. Yes, he is. Well, so they set off on this big mission to find out what it is that's causing all this havoc. And they're in for a pretty big surprise, actually, because there's a lot. It's very unexpected. But I do want to talk about the characters in the group, because there's so much going on with them in the first place. Like, there's Scanlan, who's basically just in it for himself. So is everybody else, but he's more in it for himself than most of them, to be honest. Let's not forget. There's Vex and Vax, the disaster twins. Like, come on. They're disaster twins, right? Like, let's not forget that. They're disaster twins. And then there's Percy, who is... Again, we don't know much about his past, but we know that he has some sort of trauma. We know that much. And then there's Keyleth, who's like the best person ever, but is so insecure about her abilities, which is like a great mix. And last but not least, we have Pike, who's a healer. And let's talk about all of that, because it, like you said, it's a very interesting mix of characters. And each one of them has their own abilities that they could bring to this group, but they haven't exactly found their groove yet, from what I can see. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, I would say, I think for the most part, despite, I guess, whatever, like, personal things they're working with, they're like a ragtag team of heroes, but like, they work well together. I mean, like, Vex and Vax obviously are twins, so they mm-hmm. are literally related, so of course they have a connection. But like, even in spite of that, like Grog and Pike are really close and wholesome, and you would think that they would be like yes. the last people to be together. Like Scanlan is just he's just like one of those people that when you see him, you're like, he only thinks about like sex and like yeah. stuff like that, but yes. like, I mean, yeah, that's a big part of his character, but he's got some moments, and like deep down, you know, he's got heart. He just is like one of those people who's like afraid to show it for some reason. And then I mean, obviously, like Keyleth, I feel like, I mean, I know like you and I just talked a lot about this off recording, God. But I feel like Keyleth and Adora need to like get together and just talk. I feel like they're very similar in that like they're super yes. powerful, but they're just like so afraid of doing things. And it's like, if you guys just believed in yourself for like 2 seconds, mm-hmm. the story would be over.
Oh yeah. Fights would be over like in 2 seconds, like if they actually yeah. let themselves.
Then you're deprived of the journey. That, you know, I know they take you to
are, get you to that are,
but like, very like, true. It's always yeah. worth it, like watching them come to that point where it's like, oh no, I am good at what I do, and like I know what I'm doing, and I can do like badass things because I'm confident in myself, and like that journey is always really fun to watch, like watching them go from like a little bit or maybe a lot like very insecure to super strong and confident is always, I think, a really cool thing. But it's also just like, I mean, I forget like who or where I saw this, but I saw a post on social media that was like, if Pike and Keyleth just were allowed to do their thing, the show or like the fights would be over in 2 seconds. And it's like, yeah, that's accurate. I mean, if Pike didn't have to like recharge after every healing, she'd be unstoppable. So I'm like, between that and, you know, her Everlight, like it would just be, she could just take on an infinite amount of bad guys and win. But yeah, I mean, like the crew is, they're just so much fun because they all come from different backgrounds. They're all working through different things. And on paper, they probably shouldn't mesh well together, no. But somehow they do. And like, they're able to work off of each other. And it's just so entertaining to watch. And even when when the show is exploring more individual character arcs and focusing on specific characters for specific episodes, you never really sacrifice like the group as a whole, like their story. It's still advancing maybe like one or two characters' personal agendas or personal stories, but then also like Vox Machina as a whole, which is, I think, it can be really tough to do. But I think like the cast, the crew, the writers, they all did a really amazing job kind of balancing that.
Absolutely. Angie?
I mean, kind of going back to the point that you're making about Keyleth and, I would say her character arc, gaining the confidence, that's super important, even for the viewer, for the show, because it kind of mirrors the journey that pretty much everyone goes through in life, you know? Like, we're all capable of doing so many, you know, unique and interesting
great things. But yes.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, sometimes it really helps to see that in a character, especially in a show such as Vox Machina, where there's so many different, you know, abilities of the characters, and you can kind of sense different levels of power. And Keyleth is so powerful, but the journey that she takes to unlock that, it's almost kind of, you know, a journey that we're taking with her, you know, something that the viewer can relate to as well, and maybe gain, you know, some of their own confidence from.
That's absolutely a great point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's awesome. Yeah, very true. And like you said, it really helps for us to see that growth, because as the series progresses, we do see her becoming more confident in herself and doing these things in a more easier, in an easier way, to be honest. It comes more naturally to her as the series progresses. So yeah, I find that really interesting as well. But let's talk about their search for this creature and how they end up, and how Vex and Vax have this certain suspicion that someone at Uriel's court is hiding something. So I want to talk about that, and also how that leads them on their quest, and how it you know, leads them into this bigger discovery, because that's pretty big what we see later.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big thing, like one, just finding out or just knowing that like for the past who knows how long, there's just been something, nobody's been able to figure out what, there's something out there that's just killing all of Uriel's troops, and now they're just down to like hiring mercenaries essentially to like take care of this problem. Like, that in itself is a big deal. But I think what's more probably concerning, at least as far as Vox Machina goes, is like, because Vex and Vax have this history with what happened to their mother, they have or Vex at least can sense dragons, which is what killed their mother. So
presence.
So when she starts sensing that in the council room, we find out with them that somebody on the council is hiding something and is potentially working in league with some sort of creature or monster or something to potentially undermine Uriel or do something nefarious. And it's just a matter of like Vox Machina figuring out what. And I think that's, it's really cool to see that, like, in spite of, I guess, whatever information the council may have withheld, they're still able to kind of get that tidbit of information, which I think in a game, like in the actual campaign, I'm sure that must have been something that like they rolled for to like yeah. make certain checks to figure out. But I wonder how that translated to the show. And I think like in the show, it makes sense. I think it's really cool. So seeing that was interesting. And then also just like the whole start to this journey. I mean, they go from like, we just want money to, okay, now we're fighting potentially a dragon and or something bigger and badder. And we just have like our skills to take it on and we have to survive. I think that part of it was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is very interesting how this whole thing starts because they like Vex and Vax suspect that someone on Uriel's council is hiding something. So they end up following Vince, who I will agree seems suspicious right off the bat. Like he does act suspicious, don't get me wrong, right? But like that turns out to be something else altogether. So let's talk about that because I find it really interesting how they twisted that and turned that into something even more shocking. So
yeah, I mean, Vince is like one of those guys that looks really shady.
Oh god, yes.
But then he's actually just like not doing anything. He's just there. He's like minding his own business-ish and like attempting to just do his job. But he looks really shady and looks really creepy and exactly like the type of character you would assume would be in league with like a bad person. So it's not entirely, I think, weird that he's the first guess as to who this insider on the council could be, but I don't know that anybody, I mean, unless you know the campaign, which I didn't know this bit anyway, I didn't see the twist coming that Vince is actually just doing his job and kind of just trying to find out what's going on just like the rest of them, and that Krieg is really the one who's been behind all of this. And not only is he behind it, he is the monster that has been terrorizing Iman and Tal'Dorei and just like wrecking Uriel's troops and destroying a good part of the surrounding countryside and all of that anyway. Also, just a quick shout out, or I guess not that he's going to hear it, but David Tennant as Krieg was really cool.
He was.
Did not know that. And then also, I think for people like Angie who are big Doctor Who fans, I'm sure that was a really, really cool sort of cameo.
That was super exciting, but very sad that I didn't realize that until afterwards. Like that happened with a lot of the voice acting. I didn't realize it until afterwards who was actually.
Yeah, I mean, this acting. Show, like there are so many people who are in the show that have been in other things that we've watched, and like seeing their names in the credits afterwards, it's like the funniest thing because it's like I knew that voice from somewhere and I couldn't place it, of course, at the time of the show, but afterwards when you're like looking through the like cast and crew, it's like, I know that person, I know that person, I know that person. Just like a never-ending list of like amazing VAs and actors, and just they have like such a stellar cast, and oh my god, do they really, really, really like deliver in the show. I mean, most shows, but like this one especially, like I could just keep singing their praises forever and I would never shut up.
No, I absolutely agree. I recognize David Tennant's voice because if anyone of you has watched the 2017 version of DuckTales, he plays Uncle Scrooge, which is like ridiculously cool because like he does a really good job. Like I've watched him in movies and I've watched him in these cartoons, but oh my god, I heard that voice. I know that voice. And then you told me it was David Tennant. I was like, that's where I know it from. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, true. Some I think were like really obvious and easy to catch, like Gray Delisle as Delilah, which we'll get into in a bit, but that like as soon as she opened her mouth I was like, I know that voice.
Yeah,
I know that voice. But some others it's like, I know I've heard them somewhere, but they're so good at their craft and they're so like they can just do a bunch of voices, like I know I've heard it somewhere but where, and then you go back and look and it's just like they've been in everything I've like loved
everything
and watched,
we've
since
watched. Yes.
Who knows how long.
Absolutely. But yeah, I want to talk about that. The way they did that twist was really cool because they were following Vince and they followed him to a secret hideout where he gets killed. And that hideout leads to a lair But I let you talk about how they find that lair, because I think it's hilarious. Let's get into that, because it's funny.
It is. I mean, I will gladly just rant about Flax and Keyleth and a bunch of other ships for like the rest of my days. But it's, I mean, maybe it's not super funny to like normal people, but like I thought it was really funny just the way that they're like in his lair, and also just the idea that Krieg is like an older gentleman, or like who presents as an older gentleman, like that's his disguise when he's not in his dragon form. It's like an older middle-aged ish slash elderly guy. Yeah, and then he just got like a pinup on his wall. But I love that like it's Grog staring that kind of like helps them get to Krieg, because he's just like staring at this giant poster that's like a pinup of some, I think it's from like a book series or something.
Well, yeah. And
Keyleth is like, something it's really Scanlan would be.
Let's just say it's something, a book series that Scanlan would be very interested in. Okay. We're just going to put it that way. Continue.
Probably, yeah. I don't know if he likes reading as much as just doing what he does.
Well,
but,
yeah. Fair point.
Like just the way that whole thing happens, it's because Grog is staring at like this giant poster of some scantily clad figure, and then Keyleth throws a book at his head. But I just love like the background dialogue where Vax is like, brilliant, really, and then she's like, oh, it was nothing, and then Vex like, she threw a book at his head, it was nothing. Just like the banter, that's like it's such a, like a small moment, but like that banter, that dynamic, I always thought was so funny, because for a lot of season one, like it's kind of obvious that Vax and Keyleth are dancing around each other.
Oh god.
And then Percy and Vex have their own thing going, and they're just like not acknowledging it. They're just like, this is just what we do, we're just
being friends. Idiots.
Yeah. And then yeah, okay. There's that conversation that like Vex and Vax have, where Vex is kind of like warning him, like, oh, be careful about how you proceed and all of that. And she's like, those vines have thorns. And it's like, but you're not any better. Like, what are you and Percy doing?
She would beg to differ, but that's a whole different story, because
oh, no,
she's
I'm sure she would,
herself.
But
so that's
I just thought that was hilarious, that she was like, she was kind of warning him, like, hey, you be careful. And it's like, okay, but kind of like pot calling the kettle, like I don't know. I thought that was funny.
What would you expect from disaster twins, though? That's what they do.
Oh, nothing less. So, yeah. Like,
that's the whole deal. But let's talk about the fight with Krieg, aka Brimside, because we find out that Krieg is actually the dragon that's been destroying the countryside. So let's talk about that, because that reveal was pretty cool and shocking. And also that fight is also seriously awesome. I really want to go back and watch the campaign to see how that turned out, to be honest, now that I watched it on the show. But it was a really cool setup. And I'm kind of, again, just I'm just as shocked as the group was that they managed to actually defeat a dragon. That's a pretty big deal. So let's talk about that.
One of the things that I was always curious about after that was, you know, this is a two-parter, the first, set of episodes. And you're really getting probably a condensed version of what actually happened in the campaign. So like, as shocking as it was for us viewing, you know, the show for the first time and finding out about Krieg and, Brimsythe and, you know, being whole dragon, it's, you know, can you imagine like how that must have been in the campaign? Like, you're probably getting to know these, as like NPCs over a series of episodes and, you know, building your own opinions and thinking, you know, maybe it is Vince and maybe, you know, it's one of the other council members perhaps or something like that. And then this reveal comes. It must have been pretty exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think like that's kind of the cool thing that, one, I mean, the show is a little bit more accessible just because it's a lot shorter than the main campaign. But I think the one thing that the main campaigns do so well, or even like the limited runs like EXU, is like they really build up the suspense when they need to. And especially when you're in a main campaign and you have hundreds of episodes to play with and, you know, all this, you know, screen time, so to speak, they can take their time working through certain things. So stuff like this, like Angie was saying, maybe, I mean, I don't know because I haven't seen the stream, and I know some stuff, but most of it is like, I don't know, but I would imagine that like watching in real time when it aired, or like even now going back and watching it, it must be so suspenseful, because one thing that Matt does and does really well is like end at like really key moments, and it's just like a huge cliffhanger. Oh, and then God. You're just waiting, like you have to wait till like the next episode comes out. And I think for us, we're lucky in the sense that if we decide we want to go back and watch campaign one now, you can, it's all there. It's all out, and you don't have to wait. The only waiting you have to do is, you know, when you like finish an episode, if you have time to like get to the next episode, you're just like in between that. But you're not waiting weekly for these episodes, and you're not waiting for like every Thursday to come, at least not for campaign one. So I think going back and watching it would be really interesting to see what the similarities and differences are. But also, yeah, I mean, in the actual campaign, there must have been a lot of back and forth, because it's not as straightforward as saying, we think it's Fence, we're going to tail him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they would have to work through that scenario, and whether or not it happens is...
yeah.
That's up to, I guess, the dice that the players use, and
the dice.
I guess the luck that they have. But I think just watching the way it unfolded on screen was a lot of fun. And so I'm sure the stream is equally fun.
Yeah. Can we also talk about how it's literally Dungeons and Dragons? Like,
yeah.
When we started EXU, I was, you know, wondering like, oh, does this only have to do with dragons and stuff? And then I found like, no, it's like a, you know, whole story. You can have different types of creatures, and you know, there's like a, maybe like a format, but there's no like strict rule of exactly what creature you'll encounter. And then Vox Machina comes, and like straight out of the bat, there's Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
No, you're not wrong about that. Yeah.
That's actually a really good point, which I didn't consider, because I think I can't speak to other people, but for me, like, I knew of Critical Role even before I started EXU, but I had never really gotten into it. I was just like, oh, that's like above me, and I don't know how to play. I can't figure it out. I'm not going to get into it. But then when EXU came out, I was interested because it was a limited run thing, and it seemed more accessible. And then once I started getting into the campaigns and stuff, it was like Angie was saying, you think it's just has to do with Dungeons and Dragons, but that's not the only thing there is. And even for somebody who's completely new like me, who when I went in I knew the bare minimum, even now I know the bare minimum, I feel like I know just a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But still not enough, but I never really felt super lost, and I feel like you're able to learn about stuff as you watch the streams. But the show, if you're watching it, whether or not you've seen the stream, I think the show does a good job of like giving you all the information you need, and obviously in a condensed form without necessarily telling you like, okay, we had to roll to make this happen, and this is what somebody rolled, and this is the order that they rolled in, and stuff like that. It's just, it's a fun show. But then I think there is, like Angie said, like that kind of call back to Dungeons and Dragons, because they're literally fighting dragons in a dungeon.
I absolutely agree with you there. I feel like that reveal must have been you had to be there kind of moment. And I would love to look back at that episode and see how the players reacted to that reveal in that moment. But again, by the skin of their teeth, they pull off this victory against a dragon. And that's like insane. But with that comes a few perks for them. They have a keep now in Iman. They have like a special status on the council now, because Uriel is like, you performed a great service when no one else could, so now we're going to do this for you. And I think all of that leads to this whole banquet or dinner kind of thing where these guys are invited. And also invited are someone Percy knows, because this is where things get interesting for the rest of the season. So I want to talk about that.
So the the second episode, learning about Percy.
Yeah.
That is such a shocker, because I mean, you look at the description of the episode, it's like, oh, you get to know about Percy's past and everything. And then, you know, from there, it's just like, it blows the entire season wide open.
Yeah,
it's just gonna be one episode thing. It's like a whole arc.
No, I really, yeah, that's a really good point because at the end of this two episode arc where they found Brimside, I was like, oh my God, this was the big threat that they talked to us about, and now it's like suddenly gone. What are they going to do for the rest of the season? Because I knew there was 12 episodes, but now with the arrival of the Briarwoods and how Percy recognizes them, it like you said, it blows the whole story open. And again, like Cass mentioned before, when you hear Delilah Briarwood, you're like, oh my God, that's great. And you've seen her in like I am 100% sure that if you've watched an animated show, there's a character that this woman has voiced. So it's really cool. That whole setup is really cool. I want to know what you guys thought of that because up until now, we know very little details about what Percy had gone through. But this, starting with when we meet the Briarwoods, it basically blows that whole thing open, like you said. So yeah, I want to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, even before that, even before we even know that the Briarwoods exist,
Yeah.
like they launch you right into Percy's arc. You know, like they don't sugarcoat it right from like the beginning of the episode with his dream, or I guess it's more of a memory than a dream, you know? Like you get that, like it's a jarring exposure to it, and that kind of sets the tone for what comes afterwards. And you kind of you're hooked, you kind of want to know. Like, is that a memory? Is that, you know, some kind of nightmare? And he does kind of admit that, you know, he like it's normal for him. You know, like there's
That those
no
nightmares are
other kind of
normal.
dream for him.
Yeah. Oh my
And
God.
so it's just really
Yes.
interesting, you know, how that sets the tone for everything that comes afterwards.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, because it's really, again, so this whole banquet thing happens, and that's when Percy sees the Briarwoods for the first time after a long time. And his reaction is pretty visceral. So it's something to behold, actually, and I think it's a testament to the voice actors about when you see how that whole thing played out. So yeah, I think it's really interesting that, like you said, it starts with this nightmare for Percy, and then there and he wakes up and he's still in a good position, like his group is doing okay, they have some money, they have a keep, and now and now they're invited to this banquet, but now but all that is shattered the minute he sees the Briarwoods. So yeah, I think it's interesting how they brought that up.
Yeah, the banquet bit is always really funny because there's obviously it's almost like a I don't know how to describe it, but it's like a scenario where the characters are I think restricted in what they can do, but they obviously still have like a ton of stuff they need to do, and especially this episode because you get a lot of information on Percy's backstory and well you get some information and you obviously learn that he's keeping this really big secret. That just makes him like 10 times angstier. It, I think, was just, I don't know, I just thought it was really fun to watch the characters have to try and figure out what Percy's secret is, how they're going to deal with it, all while in like this fancy formal gala type setting where they obviously can't do a ton because the sovereign is right there, half the council's right there, all these like super important people are right there, but like one of the people also happens to be. The same, or two of the people rather, happen to be the same two people that Percy's sworn to like kill and
That's a whole different thing, the sworn to kill, but yes, I know what you mean.
But like, I mean, it's still like, I don't know, just like the dynamics of the episode I thought were just really interesting because like going into the episode, it's obviously, it seems like, okay, this might be something that they can handle quietly and then they can just slink back to the feast and everybody can enjoy it and Uriel and the council would be none the wiser, but then the more or like the further the episode progresses, the more apparent it is that it's not going to be a quick and simple thing. And there's actually a lot of crazy stuff going on. And yeah, I don't know, there's something really entertaining about it, even though it does go from 0 to 100 pretty quickly. And I think this is like one of those episodes that I'm sure if you watched it in the stream, seeing the way the players interacted, I'm sure must have been really fun, but also would have been, I would imagine, very suspenseful in like a fight with the Briarwoods where you don't know the outcome. And we know now because, of course, campaign one is over and season one has aired. But in the moment, like during the actual campaign, it must have been very interesting to like see that sort of fight unfold.
Oh, yeah, that's always an interesting context, right? Because I've only watched the show, but then I realized that in the campaign, you have to, it happens real time. So it's like, and based on the dice, based on the roll that they get, they're like, oh, crap, they got away or something. So it's kind of interesting how they do that. So basically, they do see, the group sees that Percy is really agitated, and looking at that, Vax is basically like, you know what, let me investigate this, let me see what's going on. And he is able to get into their room to and I think that he even finds a book, right? But then they do get caught. So because, and I want to talk about that, because what follows is really crazy, because there's a lot going on in this scene, especially with that scuffle, because it's a really difficult fight, because not only do we find out that the Briarwoods have been, you know, magically influencing Uriel to make him think that everything's okay with Whitestone and everything's fine, but they're also necromancers, which is ridiculous. So let's talk about all of that, because that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, essentially the entire fight, it's almost like the odds are stacked against them.
Oh, yeah.
The first time that they, you know, fight the Briarwoods. And you kind of get the sense of how, you know, powerful these guys are.
Oh, yes.
And like Vox Machina is pretty darn powerful too, but this is something new that they've encountered. And I think only Percy has, you know, an idea of what horrors they're able to inflict. But it also makes me wonder, like, I know that there was a ton of people involved in that whole, you know, arc history, everything that happened with Whitestone, but like that he even managed to get away from that for that amount of time. Like, how did he even manage that? Because you saw how, like, Silas and Delilah were pretty ruthless.
Yes.
You know, in the fight. So it's almost like he would have gone in knowing what he was dealing with, but the, you know, gun and everything aside, which I'm sure we'll get to, but, like, he wasn't any better equipped, I think, to deal with it at that point. I think that's another part of, like, the story as it evolved over the seasons. Like, how they responded to Silas and Delilah and were able to kind of up their game to kind of, you know, meet them.
That is actually a very cool point.
Yeah, I just think it was so funny that, like, the start was, it starts kind of like a stealth/recon type thing, like Zach sneaking into the Briarwoods room to like gain intel, and the first encounter ends with Zach jumping out the window to avoid being bitten or turned or whatever. And then, like Angie was saying, over the course of the season, like their first encounter with the Briarwoods compared to where they end up is, I think, like that's a whole progression and a whole journey. And that was really entertaining to watch. But yeah, I mean, I was expecting the first encounter to go badly, because anytime a character tries to sneak into somebody else's room to do something when they're like right there, it usually doesn't go well. No. But I was not expecting Vax to jump out the window the first time. And that was entertaining. And then, of course, where they end up is like, it's like that growth meme.
No, that is true. You know what? That is growth. Yeah, I know exactly the meme that you're talking about. But here's the thing, though. Angie was absolutely right in saying that even after all these years, Percy wasn't exactly prepared to deal with the Briarwoods. He was not. He's not any more prepared to deal with the Briarwoods now than he was all those years ago when they were torturing him and his sister, and when they killed his entire family. So that's what really sticks with you, because he's still so traumatized by it. And that's that's what makes it so intense. And the fact that he is so viscerally angry that he blows up the entire banquet in that anger. So that lessens the time Vax has to even do that recon or intel. That's what's even crazier. And but here's the cooler thing, that in all this, in this entire scuffle, Delilah and Silas leave that book behind, right? The book which has all her magical secrets and all those things. And the other thing, unfortunately, is that during this fight, Pike's connection to the Everlight gets damaged, I would say, by Delilah's magic. But that's another cool arc that this season gave us, which I really found interesting and we'll talk about in future episodes. But yeah, that I really found all of that interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the interesting things about just the season in general, is I feel like these are arcs that you would have normally expected to find after you get a chance to really, you know the characters. Mm. Like something like the connection to the Everlight. Like that's something that I feel like you could come across in like a season 3 of a show or something like that. But instead, we have Vox Machina coming at us with all these like insane plot lines season 1, mm-hmm. but it works. Everything meshes together to build a really wonderful story throughout the entire season. Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. This is what I meant when I asked whether we were missing something from the campaign in the show. But like you guys said, it did seamlessly translate, because I think this whole thing with Pike and her connection to the Everlight may have taken like a few episodes altogether to resolve. But they basically managed to do that seamlessly in this. So I really, and props to Ashley Johnson, because she did such a great job as Pike, and I love that. But yeah, I found that really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something really, I want to say almost unique about the way they were able to tell a story with so many main characters, because the characters all get their own kind of episode or episodes to shine, and like they get their own spotlight for a bit.
True.
But it's still, I mean, the show is still the legend of Vox Machina. It's not just like the legend of one character or you know, a couple of characters. It's the show, I don't know if this makes any sense, but to me it felt like it was taking the time to give certain characters certain arcs and certain plot points, while also just kind of moving the story of the group forward as a whole. But you still got like the individual stories that a smaller show with a smaller cast could have done, or like a smaller set of main characters or whatever. I mean, like this is like what, 7 characters, 8 characters that I haven't actually counted.
Wait,
I mean, it's a fairly large it's a fairly large main cast, and to juggle all of that with individual storylines and like an overarching narrative and have like 12 episodes of like roughly, you know, 40 minutes each, it's still not a ton of screen time.
No.
And then to do all of that and to do it well, to make it entertaining, to make it engaging and compelling, and to make you want to root for these characters, it's a tall order. And I think the show does it really, really well, because I went into the show knowing the bare minimum about campaign 1 and Vox Machina, and I came out of it just utterly obsessed. Like, this is my new hyperfixation. It's like slowly taking over my life, ruining everything. Well, I love it.
No, I definitely agree, because so here's the thing. It's not like when they shifted the focus to Pike's connection to the Everlight, I was like, oh my God, what's happening with Percy is more important. Why are we focusing on this now? Because I never felt that. I felt like, oh my God, yes, it's very important to find out why Pike is feeling the way she is, which is, again, a really cool way of, you know, translating everything that happened in the campaign here without deviating from the group's story. So that's something that I really think that this show did very well. So again, so we leave these guys at a very pivotal point where they have some information, but the entire council is now against them because they insulted the Briarwoods in front of the entire council. And the Briarwoods are like playing a very good game, or a very clever game here, making themselves, you know, either by manipulating Uriel and making him think that everything's okay with Whitestone and he doesn't have to investigate, and making it look like Vox Machina is being very unreasonable in attacking them. So they're playing a very clever game here. So now these guys are in the pickle, and the Briarwoods are just like, dude, we've been insulted. We're going to leave now. So, and that's kind of a pickle that they're in. And I kind of find it interesting that that's where they left these guys at the end of episode 3. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, it, again, the episode goes from 0 to 100 pretty quickly. Yeah. And it's like the beginning, they started off as, I guess, esteemed protectors of the realm. And they basically under house arrest because Zeriel is like, you just destroyed my fancy banquet. And I mean, obviously, I think that there's a little bit more hard feelings than that. But I mean, just like where they start in that one episode alone compared to where they end up, I think, having not seen campaign one, I was not expecting that. But it also, like, I think it, as much as I hate to say it, I think Uriel, like, his decision makes sense.
And politically,
Politically, yeah. I was actually expecting him to just be like, all right, you're all getting hanged or something drastic like that, because he was also under the Briarwood's influence. I wasn't sure how much of that would end up in, like, would influence his decision and how he handled or took care of Vox Machina at the end. But I think it's also really interesting because even, like, these minor characters sometimes get a little bit of the limelight. And so, like, this episode is a good example because at the end, they're trying to make a plea to Uriel and try and convince him that, like, not everything is the way you think it is, and there's something fishy going on. And he doesn't seem to want to listen to what they have to say, but Lady Allura thankfully is like, well, there might be something, but you're still under house arrest. And I think it was really interesting. I thought that he was really quick to just be like, all right, fine, you know what, Allura, you take care of this mess, see that they're properly punished, and I'm just gonna wash my hands of the whole thing. Because I was fully expecting him to just go full, like, punishment zombie king mode and to, like, beheading or hanging or something, you know, drastic like that. But I think for the story, and then also just as a kind of interesting thing, it was neat that he was just like, you know what, I'm just gonna give Allura this mess and then she can deal with it. And I do wonder if, like, the story hadn't turned out the way it had, I do wonder what Allura would have done, like, how she would have tried to sort of, I guess, I mean, I don't know if she would punish them the way Uriel wanted, but I guess she would have tried to do something so that Vox Machina maybe saw what she considered was the error of their ways. I don't know.
I think she kind of saw something was suspicious. I think she did suspect something, which is why when these guys were like, hey, something's wrong, the Briarwoods aren't exactly what they seem. And Percy basically insisting, hey, I have a history with them. They are not good people. So I think, like I said, the Briarwoods were playing a very clever game. And they've presented themselves as these good people with resources that they can, you know, help Uriel with. But, and as if they're an alliance that Uriel cannot, you know, let go of. So I guess that's what I find really interesting. But yeah, as of now, they're under house arrest and it's not looking good for them. And it's really difficult to see how they're going to get out of this one. And with that, guys, we're going to end this episode. I know we said we'd do 6 episodes for this, but it turns out there's so much more going on.
Too much to talk about.
And there's a lot to talk about. So that's exactly why we're going to end this here. For everyone who stuck around to listen to us nerd out about this, thank you so much. And thank you so much, Angie, for joining us. This was really fun and great. And we hope that you join us for other episodes too, because this was awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for having me, and look forward to nerding out with you guys again.
Yes, absolutely. It will be great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
As always, our lovely theme song is Water Lily by the 126ers. The Nerdy Podcast podcast is available on Anchor, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and you can follow us online at nerdy-podcasts.tumblr.com or at nerdypodcasts.wordpress.com.